to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Jed Hartley, son of a false prophet and a former member of the International House of Prayer. Jed, I still can't help but laugh whenever I say son of a false prophet.
I've had to be pretty self-actualized about it, so, you know, it doesn't bother me.
Well, for everyone's sake, we focus on the false prophets almost every week whenever we get together. So let's focus instead on the people. It's going to be a little bit sad, a little bit. I'm opening with a, you know, a happy vibe, but it is a little bit sad when you think about the way that people get manipulated by the false prophets, or I think the better way to say it is the false anointed ones at the end time, if you consider this to be the end time, and I'm quoting that passage from the Bible loosely. But when you're in that type of environment, when you have a central figure that is divinely appointed by God, what happens when something goes wrong? What happens whenever you find out they're not appointed by God? The problem is there isn't really room for that discovery. If you discover that the man, woman, whoever it is that you're following has been telling you that they're anointed by God and that God has got this big move planned, well, you become part of the move. And if it's a movement by God and you're convinced in your head to believe this, the problem is it's not always of God. And sometimes they're telling you it's of God and it's not always of God. Well, what happens is whenever a leader falls, they always open with this phrases like this: you only heard one side of the story. And when they say that, they're referring to the people who stand up against the crimes that are being committed, sometimes moral crimes, sometimes actually criminal issues, but they say you only heard one side of the story. And then everyone in the audience listens to this and they think, well, that phrase sounds reasonable. I've only heard from the people who are voicing the fact that they have been abused. But see, that doesn't really work in abuse cases. That doesn't really work whenever you have victims. And while it sounds good, while somebody's stepping up and saying, well, you only heard from those victims, you only heard from the people who have been abused or something like this, well, it doesn't work because the person that they're trying to defend is sometimes the person who committed the immoral or the criminal acts that are happening. So I want to focus a bit on the people, but I want to be very cautious here because sometimes, in some cases, the people can't help it. If you factor in all of the mind control stuff that we've talked about, and if you need more information about that, you want to learn more about it, you can read Dr. Stephen Hassan's book, which is Combating Cult Mind Control, and you can see the effects that it has on people in this type of movement. And you can make your own conclusion as to whether it's a mind control cult or not. I've made my opinions, but the problem is that does exist. You have people who get into the groupthink. The leader has told them they are the anointed one. And when the anointed one does something that is horrific, well, there are people who will back the leader. And they'll point fingers actually at the person who's been the victim. And in other words, they're further victimizing the victim. So, Jed, I'll let you explain the topic today. But I want to proceed with caution because There's multiple facets of things to think through as we talk through this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like watching movies where you see the same tropes over and over, like cheap horror movies or thriller movies or something like that. There's always the same type of jump scare, and you're like, okay, we've seen this all before, and it's amazing how much. I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, before I had started digging into a lot of the stuff that you've spent a lot of your life digging into and just seeing sort of the corruption within specifically this like latter rain movement that extended from William Branham and others. I mean, there the same tropes are cycling over and over and over, and it's stuff that I saw when I was younger too, but I didn't realize that they were tropes because I didn't see it happening in other settings besides our own. And so now when you see it, or now when I see it, it just, like you said, it triggers some sort of response, because I know what they're doing and know what they're trying to accomplish. And I know why it's a trope, because it is good at silencing victims or people to speak out loud. So specifically, I really wanted to address our last episode. We had talked about Bethel, and there was a scandal with Bethel that involved a pastor on staff named Ben Armstrong, where he was accused by an intern, or actually multiple interns, but one specifically, the brunt of the accusation was from an intern who he had groomed and abused in the past. And so I don't want to get into all of the details of that one. Again, I encourage people to look that up, because that is something that is being investigated right now. And supposedly there is a Bethel sponsored investigation that is going on, which we'll see what that turns out, and we'll see whether or not it is a truly independent investigation. I seriously have my doubts, and we talked about that on the last episode, that this feels very similar to the first independent investigation that IHOP ended up doing. That, if people don't know how that happened, the International House of Prayer hires a lawyer that is their own sort of lawyer and their connections to investigate Mike Bickle. She ends up coming back and being like, there's nothing really, there might have been an affair, not a really big deal. About 4 or 5 months later, a truly independent organization is hired by people who were Christians and charismatic Christians who are within that community, who weren't specifically IHOP but wanted the truth to actually come out. And then this investigation turns out that there were 17 women, at least 17 women, who were groomed by Mike Bickle, that there was a culture of abuse that was cultivated at IHOP. So we saw that sort of like, oh, nothing, here's this investigation, nothing turns up. And then an investigation that seemed actually underfunded, if anything, came up and was like, okay, there clearly was a systemic pattern of abuse here. So maybe we'll see the same thing at Bethel. Again, it's the same tropes. We're seeing the same cycles over and over. And I'm trying not to be cynical and just acting like they're all the same, because they're not all the same. These are different people, different abusers, different leaders, different victims, different settings. I shouldn't lump it all together as one thing, but it is very difficult to not see the overlap between these, because just the way that they are handled is so eerily and depressingly similar. So all that to say, I just kind of want to break down in this episode, one I'll be sharing with you. I don't know, John, if you saw this interview that I'm going to be referencing, but Jen Johnson, for those who don't know, is the daughter-in-law of Bill Johnson. Bill Johnson being the primary pastor at Bethel for several decades, has stepped a little bit back and is more in this sort of patriarchal leadership role at Bethel. But I mean, Bill is absolutely the leader of Bethel, and Jen Johnson is his daughter-in-law. And Jen Johnson is also, I believe, the head of Bethel Music, or is at least significantly in leadership of Bethel Music. I mean, she's a very talented musician. I'm sure many people who are listening to this have heard one of her songs, if not dozens of her songs, and I'm sure people would be familiar with it even if they didn't know it was Jen Johnson. If they heard her singing, they would say, oh, that makes sense. And so, I mean, she's an important figure in her own right too. I mean, she's very well respected from a music perspective. Like I know that there's a lot of people who really look up to her. So, I mean, a really important figure, not just because of her sort of relationship with her father-in-law, but just a very important figure in the Bethel community and the larger charismatic community. So she went on this interview, talking about Bethel music and talking about just Bethel in general, but specifically it seemed like that she went on an interview to do a little damage control. And that interview is still on YouTube. However, there was a 12-minute clip from that interview where she explicitly talked about the scandals that are going on with Bethel. And that 12-minute clip was deleted from the official interview because it was extremely problematic.
And that actually is very important. And it goes back to what I said earlier about the groupthink mindset. Whenever something like this happens, the group has a mythology. The leadership is allegedly anointed by God. It has created a movement. The movement must be a movement by God. Well, what happens when there's an outside force that is raising strong opposition? And that could be a victim, that could be news media, that could be pretty much anything that tries, that has a conflict with the narrative that's being established, the story of the movement. The story of the movement is important. But the thing that a lot of these movements don't realize is the edit itself becomes part of that story. When I was beginning to investigate Branham, we were told that Branham was a prophet by God. Everybody who approached the platform, they got to witness the anointing. The anointing would tell them that they're healed and they would walk away healed. That's what we were told. We were told it was 100% accurate 100% of the time. And then I started noticing in my research, there were hundreds of blank spots on tape. They were literally cutting the tape recording and then splicing it together. And you can even hear it on some of the old audio recordings where, I don't know if you've ever done this, Jed, but you can cut a cassette tape and you can tape it and it'll bloop over the over the spot where you cut it. Well, you hear some of these things, man, and you're like, what's going on? I remember hearing it while I was listening to it as a child. Well, now that I'm understanding that there were instances where people did not get healed, and coincidentally, there are a lot of blank spots on the recording. Well, that becomes part of the story, and people who find out and discover it, now that becomes part of the overall narrative, and then that too has to be defended by the group mindset. So in the end, what happens is the victims, regardless of the reasons why it was removed, to the victims, this looks like they're covering up evidence. I'll say it like that. And the victim further gets victimized.
So I saw the video when it first came out, and I remember thinking I should record this, and I didn't, but I'm so glad that somebody on Twitter did. There's also I don't know much about this website or this news organization, but there's a website called Protestia that seems to chronicle a lot of church scandals or specifically associated with, it looks like, a lot of the charismatic community. And it has, there's an article on there that is called, deleted 12-minute clip of tone-deaf Jen Johnson responding to Bethel scandals. If people wanted to look this up and get more context, because I will try to give as much context as possible, but it's good just to get a good reference for it. But it does a good job of chronicling kind of what's going on. But in it, Jen responds to this man, Alex, who is interviewing her, and Alex specifically asks very explicitly about two situations. He doesn't give the names, but he asks Jen about the Sean Bowles situation, or potentially my dad. Whether he was referring to Sean Bowles or my dad, because he asked about a closely associated Bethel partner in ministry was caught using social media to gather information about people before publicly giving words of knowledge and prophecy about those specific people. And then that same leader has also allegations of sexual abuse. Now, that could refer to two different people. That could refer to Sean Bowles, or that could refer to my dad. I believe that it's probably referring to Sean Bowles because Sean Bowles was a larger, there was the video that Mike Winger put out that really clearly got Bethel riled up. So I'm pretty sure that it was referencing Sean Bowles. The fact that it could also reference to my dad is just an eerie. It's bizarre and unfortunate that there are multiple individuals who directly fit that MO. And then the next one was clearly about Ben Armstrong, a pastor on staff who was recently accused by an intern I'm not going to reference exactly how he said it, but we've referenced the Ben Armstrong one. So Alex asks Jen about these two situations. And then I'm going to just read the first section of her response. I'm just going to read it verbatim. I thought about how I was going to introduce this, and I was listening to it back. I listened to it again this morning too, and I was taking notes, and I was taking notes on every single sentence she was writing, and I was like, I might as well just read the exact thing that she said. So again, asking about two very serious situations about people who are heavily involved with Bethel, having both sexual and prophetic abuse accusations. Very credible, believable accusations by multiple individuals, not just a single individual. And this is how Jen responds. She says, "Tough stuff. That's what I'd say at the top. It's just tough. And I know and love the people that are accused. And I think at the end of the day, humans are humans. And for me, the tough part is that oftentimes people only hear the internet. They only hear one side of the story. They only hear what someone who wasn't even connected to the experience is saying about it, or what they've heard, or oftentimes it's just one side of the story that is broadcast. And that's really painful."
Yeah. As I said earlier, whenever you try to make the argument you only heard one side of the story, that just doesn't work with abuse victims. Yes, it may be one side of the story, but if they've been abused, it doesn't matter the other side of the story. That's really the problem here. But again, go back to the groupthink mindset. The way that the mind has been wired in these movements, you can't let the so-called anointed ones by God, you can't let them come under any attack. So you have to defend the so-called anointed ones at the expense of the victims. And for me, I just can't imagine a movement like this where the victims are further victimized. Whenever you try to think about what is a healthy church, there's no way that you can even call it a healthy church whenever victims are further victimized by being in the church or being even loosely connected to the church. It's just simply not what church is meant for. Whenever it gets to that level, instead of the biblical model for the church, where the church is made for the people, in this case, the people are made for the church and you must defend it at all costs. That is just not what church is for.
To begin calling it tough stuff, you got to be, that's super tone deaf. Like, it just seems very minimizing of it. She says, "I know and love the people that are accused." Well, the victims are all Bethel people. Every single one of the victims was a part of the Bethel community. I think that with people like my dad and Sean Bowles, there were other victims who weren't necessarily directly involved with Bethel, but everyone who, or there were several individuals, I will say, who were either on, some were on staff at Bethel, some were longtime members of the congregation, and all of them to some extent were drawn to the Reading area because of Bethel. Like, that's why they were there. Maybe they were just there for a season and they weren't longtime, you know, church members of Bethel, but this was all people who were in the sort of scope of Bethel's community. So the fact that she immediately says, I know and love the people that are accused, I think that it's just she's immediately telling on herself. And I don't think she has any idea that she's doing this, but this is like, if you're even if you have just a quick PR discussion, someone would tell you, well, say that you love and know both the people, everyone involved, just use the term everyone involved, which saying that you love the accused is probably not what you should be doing anyway. I love the accused. I love my dad. That's not what I'm saying in these situations, because I understand that this is not what this is about anymore. Whether or not I love my dad has nothing to do with what he has done. And if I can get on here with you or speak out loud to Minnie or call up Bill and call up Chris and talk about the failures that my father's doing and how that is impacting people in the Bethel community, then like, I don't want to hear Jen Johnson talk about how she loves the accused. Like, it's just so ridiculous. And specifically that the framing is around the accused and not the victims. So then, end of the day, humans are humans. Boys will be boys. This is just the people do these things. No, they don't. They really don't. I've said this before with you, John, and I've said it on the podcast many times, but like, people will try to, this is one of the tropes, is they will try to minimize the failures of the leadership as, hey, we all fall into sexual sin, or we all have temptations, or we all have do this, and humans are just humans. At the end of the day, Jesus is good and he loves us and he redeems, but we're all human. We have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. She absolutely says that later in this specifically. No, we don't all use our power and authority to manipulate people to take sexual advantage of them. In fact, very few people in the world do that. Now, I don't disagree. There's a lot of abuse. There's a lot of manipulation. There's a lot of times people will take advantage of other individuals. Like, I certainly would not be considered an optimist about the human nature. You know, I've certainly have my doubts about human beings in general and the failures of human beings in general. But it is a ridiculous notion to think that the actions of Sean Bowles or my father or allegedly I with Ben Armstrong are something that happened that ought to be or are that commonplace in churches or communities. They're far more commonplace than it should be, but no, this is not something that happens every day, and it certainly shouldn't. And it's not a, you know, you got upset and you were impatient with your child when you should have been patient. I'm a teacher now, so, you know, there's certainly times where I'm like, man, I could have been more patient with my students. I could have come with my lesson plans a little bit more prepared.
Well, that's just it. I mean, how do you prepare for the unpreparable? You know, whenever you've got a movement that is claiming it is a movement by God and the people who are in it are anointed, and not just the leadership, but all the way down to the elders who are in the, it's a movement. It's a movement by God. Otherwise, you would just go to a normal church down the road, right? Why would you go to a church where this kind of thing is happening? The people have to defend the movement, and it's indefensible. That's really what this comes down to. And there's such a conflict too. I mean, the doctrines themselves, if you, and I won't go too far with this, but when you study out how the movement has treated sexuality, and then to learn that many of the people who are training the rank and file members in the movement are violating their own rules and laws on sexuality. this just turns into such a big, huge problem, and it's indefensible.
There's a scale of things, right? Your conduct And I think that this is part of the strategy of the community in general of like the, I mean, think that this Latter Rain movement, Bethel, is probably one of the most intense communities in the United States around sexuality specifically, like about obviously very anti-LGBTQ, but like you can also have people within those communities to some extent who are extremely like, you know, obviously no sex till marriage, the stay faithful, like the sexual purity is in the charismatic, the larger charismatic world. I mean, that is probably the most hammered thing throughout the entire community. And I think that this is in part like it's to make it seem like everyone's failing.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. I don't talk about this much on the podcast because there are people who attack anything that you say personally, but I loved my grandfather. I really did. And my grandfather was the pastor, the head pastor at William Branham's Branham Tabernacle for almost 50 years. He was the face of the movement. He really was. And I was close to him. I remember doing things with him that, you know, grandson-grandfather relationship that everybody dreams of having. Well, it was a little bit robbed from me because he was so busy as part of the movement. But the moments that I had with him, I did cherish. He was what I felt to be a good man growing up. I knew him from the personal side. There was a public side to my grandfather, and I clearly, even growing up, I separated the two. I knew the personal side of him, and I would say that he had a genuinely good heart. He was a caring, loving grandfather. He really was. But I was faced with the problem after leaving the movement of learning that there was another side to my grandfather. And my family witnessed this whenever we first left. He came down really, really hard against us just for questioning. In fact, whenever I contacted him and I was talking about questioning the movement, he not only cut me off from the group, but he cut my wife and children off from the group, not even knowing if they were questioning. So because I raised the question, like we talked earlier about the edits, I became part of the story. He didn't just cut me off, he cut my family off. And only, in my opinion, and I'll never know because he's no longer living, I can't ask him why he did it, but in my opinion, he only did it to suppress the questions. And it didn't work, obviously, but I loved my grandfather. I also had to come to terms with the fact that my grandfather supported the abusers. And again, I don't talk about this much. I don't want to go too far with this, but I came in contact with multiple families who mentioned that they were suffering from abuse. And I won't go into the details of that abuse, but they talked about it. And in some cases, there were even some records that I was able to come across. This was problematic. I remember clearly whenever I started talking to the people who were victimized. And in certain situations, the person who was abusing them was supported over the victims, and they were told that if they toe the line, if they stay in line, then this won't happen. It's because they strayed from God's will, or whatever was the nonsense that my grandfather gave them. I remember the first thought that came in my head was not, let's defend my grandfather, even though I was in the movement. The first time I ever heard anything like this, my first thought was, oh my gosh, what did this do to you? I felt so sorry for the victims, even though I was in the groupthink mindset, which is a little bit odd. I know that there are a lot of people that they can't help it. They're in the groupthink mindset. But that was my thought, the victims. After I escaped and started hearing more stories like this, my grandfather apparently had two sides to him. It was very sad. I had to come to terms with the fact that whenever there are cases where there's a victim, you can't support and defend the people who are upholding the abusers. It's wrong. There are no two ways about it. I did love my grandfather. Just like Jen said, I love some of the people who were causing true harm in the movement. But that doesn't separate the people who are being victimized. It does not separate it. I can't stand for somebody who's being victimized to be further victimized. In fact, that's why I do what I do. This podcast, this all of the stories that we have, this is because there are voices that are unheard who are suffering. And the leadership does not care about those suffering. The first inclination, just like my grandfather's, let's cut them off, because if you cut off the people who are being victimized, then suddenly the rest of the group doesn't have to think about it. And I say, no, that is not how church works. If you're doing this, this isn't church. This isn't a movement by God. This is a movement by Satan himself.
Yeah. And this idea that loving the accuser, or sorry, the accused, means that you don't take serious the accusation. I mean, the whole point is that because I love my dad, I mean, one, it's not just about my dad. There's other people who are involved in his situation. Speaking about his situation, my actions are not just determined by my love for my dad, because there's other people that you love, you care about, and there's other people who are affected. But even just if it was just about my dad, we have had loved ones who have had their worst tendencies built up and enabled because of a system, a broken system that intentionally is structured in a way to do this. So something needs to be done for it, even for the sake of the abusers. I mean, even for their own sake, accountability is literally the only thing that will bring restoration. And that's not like just a spiritual perspective. That's just a natural, like, I've seen the degradation of my dad's mental health and his life in general due to poor and sinful, I guess. I don't know what the right word for it is, but because of the decisions that he has made, he has just further descended into a sense of madness in some respects. And the only way that would have ever been intervened, you know, or stopped, was if he was held accountable for the things that he was doing, because it was clear that he was not going to hold himself accountable for these things. And so I know certainly I was hoping that me speaking out would help bring some of that accountability, and it didn't. I mean, maybe to some extent. I mean, it's certainly not in a way that he is changing any of his life or taking accountability for his life, but at least it helped keep the wake of those who are suffering in the sort of the wake of his abusive decisions. It minimized that, but yeah.
I'm opening up more than I usually do, but there is another aspect of this that people don't really think through. So whenever you're in a movement where the victims are further victimized, it's very easy to see that there's a problem there. But think of the people who are not victimized. Look at the situation and think of it from the perspective of a person who's watching all of this unfold, but is struggling, heavily struggling, mentally, whatever is the issue that they're having. I also have a family member who saw no pathway forward. He was doing well in school. He was well-loved, respected by everyone, but he had hit the place in his life where he was suffering with some mental health issues. He was not able to continue in the way that things were continuing and saw no way out. And that's the people that my heart bleeds for. People like this, and I'm trying not to break up, but people like this, they're struggling. They're in a movement where there is no way to go forward if there's an issue. There's nobody that you can go to and say, hey, I need help because whatever's the issue. I need help because of this issue that I have. If you're in a movement, and the movement is by God, and God is making all of the movement, all of the ebbs and flows of the movement to be supernaturally anointed, which is what we grew up with. What happens whenever something is not? That's really the problem here. What happens when there's not? It could be somebody that's victimized. It could be something simple as just some life struggle that somebody has that they can't overcome. Well, if you go to the movement and you can't overcome it, well, do you have a demon? That's really where this ends up with. What we're talking about here is the same thing, but in a different way. They're looking at the people who are accusing the people that we're talking about, whether they did it or not. The people who are accusing them are demonized. And so whenever you have a problem in this type of movement, whenever you are struggling, your first thought is, well, what if they think I have a demon? And then suddenly that voice becomes silent. A voice crying out for help, a voice who needs help, can't get it. That's where this whole church model that they have created, and not just this group that we're talking about, I'm talking about every group that I've examined in the website that has developed from this Branhamite thing. They have a structure that is not a healthy church, because in most cases, not all, but in most cases, you feel, as a person who's struggling, you feel like you can't get help. And that's not what church is for. Church is to help those who are in need. It's to pick up the lowest sinner and lift them up, not to despise the lowest sinner, not to, you know. In this case, they're trying to flip it on its head by saying, well, that's what you're saying about the accusers and the accused. They're trying to say, well, you can't pick them up as the lowest sinner, but no, think about all of the other people who are sitting there. Whenever you have somebody who's in leadership that you're defending in this way, now the people who are struggling, the people maybe who are sinning, they feel like they can't come forward because there is no room, there's no variance for something that isn't part of the movement. And that's not the structure of a church. Yes, maybe the accused are sinners, but take them out of leadership, get them the help that they need, and then show instead as a church, show as a healthy church, yes, we see that there's a problem here. Let's take them out. Let's get them the help that they need, but they shouldn't be in leadership if other people are at risk.
She said that it's tough that oftentimes people only hear the internet. They only hear one side of the story. They only hear what someone who wasn't even connected to the experience is saying about it. This makes me so angry, and I actually looked, I got her phone number. I asked someone for her phone number to talk about this too. I don't know whether or not she ever got my message, but I think that this is really a disgusting thing to say, because, and like, I take personal umbrage to it too. Like, it is personally offensive to me, because a few different things. One, there's this idea that people who are saying things on the internet are not connected to what's going on in the real world. Like, these are just, you know, outside voices who heard a rumor, who picked up the rumor, and then are talking about it, who have never met any of these people. The only people who have been talking to the victims are people on the internet so far. Right, the only people who have actually been giving time of day to the genuine actual victims, as someone who is directly involved in this, I know that it was not Bill Johnson. It was not Chris Fallotton. It was not Jen Johnson. It was not these people who seemed like they cared or were interested in the stories that I was giving, the stories that my father's other victims were giving, that I spoke to some of Sean Bowles' victims. I mean, overwhelmingly, the only times, like, I did talk with Chris Fallotton, and I had one single email exchange with Bill Johnson. In both cases, it felt like damage control. The interest was not in the victims or the people who were involved. So when we talk about connected to the experience, you know who is not connected to the experience is Jen Johnson. She is not connected in any way to these experiences because she has already said it. She is identifying with the accused. So she's connected with them. She has history with them. She has relationship with them. She has seen how that they have been able to boost their conference numbers and sell more tickets to their, you know, prophetic conferences. Has she been actually connected to the people? Certainly not in the case with my dad. Whether or not with, I mean, I'm sure that she probably was closer to Ben. But, you know, how connected is she actually to them? I don't know. Is she connected at all to the victims? Has she shown, are any of the victims of these abusers, have any of them felt like, you know what, Jen Johnson heard and understood the situation that I was in? I would go so far as to venture a guess and say no. I certainly know the answer is no with the direct victims that I have spoken to, which is much more than she has spoken to, I will say.
Like I said, whenever I started to learn that my grandfather was supporting people who were abusing their family members, my first thought was the victims. Suddenly, I feel like I've loved my grandfather, but human nature, you can't help it. Well, oh my gosh, you're hurting, you're bruised, you're bleeding. Let me help you. Let me lift you up. That's human nature. That's just part of the human instinct to help another human. And it goes to show me that within this movement, whenever you have this situation where you're faced with that contradiction, isn't anointed by God? Is the leadership part of a movement by God? Is God controlling every aspect of the movement? Or is there really a victim? Whenever the first thought is to go towards defending the people who are part of the movement, it shows that there is a level of mind control. Now, I can't examine Jen and determine what's in her head, but I can say that if you look outside of this, look at all of the different examples that we've given, what happens is the people are faced with the conflict in their head, and rather than take the human instinct, which would be, let's support the victims, let's lift up the victims, even if they're in the wrong, even if the victims are in the wrong, you still, it's a church, you lift them up, you help them. I don't care if, it, so in this situation, if every single person who is accusing is in the wrong, it doesn't matter. The leadership should be abhorred that this could even take place. Let's work with the victims. Let's help them out. Let's lift them up. Let's encourage them. Let's bring them back into love and a healthy church. Let's bring our church to a healthy church. Whenever you don't have that, it shows me that you have just defied human nature, because every human wants to help another human. I can't imagine a scenario where a church, a healthy church, can let this continue in the way that it is. Something has to change. Something has to give. And for me, it, like you said earlier, it starts with accountability. You have to be accountable. You have to show openness. You have to show transparency. And you can't keep supporting people who are, in some cases, some of the names that we've discussed, they have been clearly proven that there were problems. I'll just say it like that and keep it safe for YouTube. There were clear problems, and the problem makers are the ones who are defended.
So there's this idea that the people who are talking about it are not connected, which, again, as someone who is one of the voices speaking out, I mean, is literally about my dad. Like, it's so frustrating, because I don't know who the hell she's talking about in general. Because is she talking about Mike Winger? Because Mike Winger interviewed me, talked to Bob Hartley's son. He interviewed Michelle Seidler, one of the victims that had come forward about my dad and spoken with and talked to many of the different victims of my dad. He spoke with, I know, many of the victims of Sean Bowles. I can't remember all what is public and what is not. So, I mean, you can see he did this 6-hour video about Sean Bowles and my dad and what was going on with Bethel. It was incredibly well researched. And you know what? I felt like Mike Winger cared about me. I'm not saying that Mike Winger handled it perfectly. And I, you know, there's some philosophical disagreements that I have with Mike Winger and certainly spiritual disagreements, but like he cared about it and he clearly has some sense of like this feels like injustice. And so he's going to speak with the victims and try to get clearly what's to the bottom of things, not fabricating anything, right? Not going on a witch hunt just for the sake of like boosting his numbers. And he was the only person who was giving a platform to the victims. This is another thing. Like there's this question of like, well, they're talking on the internet. Give me an invitation to go speak at Bethel. I would love to come to the Bethel leadership and I would love to explain to them how I saw my father abuse their system and I saw them abuse my father to use this sort of like toxic codependency where they were helping him fabricate this persona and how it was extremely toxic, how only testimonies like they were no testimony was weighed. He was saying ridiculous stuff from the pulpit and no one was slowing down and checking him on any of these things. And then he made a complete farce of the prophetic movement in general, which many others were doing. So maybe the prophetic movement in general is just a farce, but that's, you know, I could speak and I would have loved to. And in 90% of other situations, you would think that like, oh man, if it was only my dad who was deceiving people, people would have asked me about it and asked like, oh, how can we prevent this in the future? No one's asked me how they can prevent it in the future. And like, I know that I'm coming from a very personal perspective and it's not about me and it's not about my dad and there's other victims, but I mean, this is the perspective that I have. And so this is where I feel very confident. The only times I get this worked up is because I directly know the situation that I was involved in. And that's why I'm getting so intense about it. But like when we talk about speaking on the internet, especially in this case, I mean, with Ben Armstrong, the most prominent person who I know of who was telling their story was literally the victim of Ben Armstrong who went on the Wake Up and Win podcast and she told her story. So what the hell does Jen Johnson mean when she says these people are not connected to it? Who is she talking about? Because in this situation, it's not somebody from a different religion, different community coming and talking about what's going on. It is literally the victims of the people who are abused. Like it is individuals like me who grew up meeting with Bill Johnson and having back room, you know, like it's seeing the inner workings of the church. I could not be possibly more connected to what is going on at Bethel. And yet she has the audacity to say these people are not connected. And truly, it's only because there's just zero outlet for anybody to speak up in any sort of accountability sense publicly within the church community. Like there's just no method for that. So the only other method is to go online and use social media. It's just the only other way.
I don't talk about doctrine much because there are people who are better suited for that than me. I usually stick with the history. But in this case, think about this. The doctrine of the fivefold ministry in the way that the movement has presented it, not in the way that the Bible has presented it, but in the hierarchical way that this movement has presented it, it is the root cause of everything that we're seeing right here. There is a passage in Ephesians that talks about the apostles, prophets, pastors, evangelists, and teachers. Yes, but in the Bible, in the biblical model, they're all equal. There are people who are working in their role in the church to help other people. And take apostle. Apostle is somebody who is sent out with authority. If you really read and understand what the Bible means, there can be no modern apostles because the apostle had to be somebody who had direct contact with Jesus. So there were an initial set of apostles, and they went out. And then from there grew the evangelists, pastors, teachers, etc. These apostles never go out. They stay at their church and they build their kingdoms, right? It's like a Game of Thrones. But because they have set and established that model, so Ben's position is prophetic overseer or something like this. He's part of the prophet role of that hierarchy. So in the pyramid, he is in the tier up here, and the rank and file members, including victims, are down here. That's really the problem. The leadership has to uphold the leadership because it's a pyramid. You pull the bottom out, the pyramid topples. That's what this is. It's a pyramid strategy of church. And for me, that doctrinally speaking, that is the problem. Whenever you have a doctrine that enables people to become victimized instead of lifting the church up, whenever you have a doctrine where even if the person claiming to be a victim is wrong, can't get the help that they need, it's not a church. That is not what church is for. Church is to help people, to help Christians grow as Christians. And if you have a situation where you're going to say, okay, this segment of my church, I'm not going to help them, but this other segment that's in the leadership tier, I'm going to at all costs defend it. It's a Game of Thrones where you're at all out war. And that is not what church is for. The question is, Jed, how do we solve this? How do we move forward in such a way where this pyramid structure that has, it started before Branham, but Branham really helped spread this thing. How do we take something that has for decades, over 50 years, has grown and developed into empires where the empire itself is the focus, not Jesus, not the Bible, the empire is the focus. How do we stop it? How do we change things in a way where this doesn't happen?
The only way is to talk about it. That's why I come on this podcast with you is other than just hanging out with you and getting to see you, which is the other primary reason, but it's to, no one would know about many of the abusive things and the abusive culture that is going on in these latter rank communities in general, because there's no method of speaking about it that will ever come out publicly within the community. So there needs to be things like this. And I wish that there was things like this for when I was young, so that I could have seen the sort of historical precedent and seen some of the tropes and the ways that what I was experiencing had happened before. I think that's why we share.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's why I do what I do. There are so many people that are bleeding. They need help. And my podcast, if you are unaware, whenever I have the stories on Friday where everybody shares their story, my podcast is open to anybody who has escaped. I don't care your story. I don't care which direction you've went. You have a story to tell because you're a voice that's unheard. And many people have actually left Christianity because of these voices that are being silenced. And for me, that's wrong. It is about what you said. It's about the transparency. It's about letting the voices be heard. It's not about silencing the voices. This isn't a what happens in the church stays in the church. This is a problem that needs to be rooted out. And even if the victims are wrong, if you're listening and you're part of this NAR movement leadership, if you think that just because a victim is wrong that you can't help them, you need to reevaluate whether you should be sitting in a position at church of leadership, because that's not what leaders do. That's not how leaders act. So thank you so much for doing this, Jed.
My pleasure.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.